A few weeks ago, a colleague of mine posted an interesting message online. "I'm about to teach a class to teenagers," he said, entitled, "Six Jews Who've Changed the World." "Who," he asked, "would be on your list?" What an interesting question. Who are the six Jews who've most changed or influenced the world? That's not an easy question to answer. Think about it for a minute. Who, in your view, would make the cut? If we're going to include biblical figures, we'd have to start with Abraham, about whom we read today. I suppose if God hadn't stopped him from sacrificing Isaac, he'd have been the only influential Jew in history. He is the father of the three great so-called Abrahamic faiths, Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. So he would be on most lists. And so too would Moses. And of course, if we are including not only the Hebrew Bible, but also the New Testament, we would have to include the central Jewish character in the New Testament, namely Jesus, who, according to Time magazine, is the most influential figure in all of human history. Clearly, we are going to get bogged down if we include the Bible. So let's just consider people who've lived since then. In fact, let's just consider people who've lived in the past few hundred years, about whom we probably know much more. Who might we include on our list? Well, if we're thinking about the great revolutions in human thought in the 19th and 20th centuries, three names naturally suggest themselves. There's Karl Marx in the field of economics. There's Albert Einstein in the field of physics, of course. And then there's Sigmund Freud, whose work unlocked the secrets of the unconscious. You got that right, correct? Yep. Those three were true revolutionaries, and their work has transformed humanity. Now, if we think about the waning days of the 20th century and the early ones of the 21st century, other names, perhaps less well-known, come to mind. There's Sergey Brin, okay, the co-founder of Google. Now, that has transformed the world, has it not? But then maybe we need to include Larry Page, the other co-founder of Google, who apparently was raised without a religious identity, but whose mother, according to Google, is Jewish. And maybe we would have to include Mark Zuckerberg, the founder of Facebook. After all, how many of us have not checked our Facebook pages in the last few days? But if, of course, not today. But if we're including Mark Zuckerberg, we should definitely include Sheryl Sandberg, whose philosophy of leaning in has been so influential of late. But if we include Sheryl Sandberg, how can we not give credit to Betty Friedan, the author of The Feminine Mystique, who deserves so much credit for the feminist revolution here and throughout the world? Now, Jews have had profound impact on society in other ways as well, of course. There's Jonas Salk, who invented the polio vaccine, and there are many other Jewish physicians who have made remarkable contributions to the health and well-being of literally billions of human beings on the planet. If we're talking about influence, well, as we know, Jews have excelled in the creative arts and pop culture. There's Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster, the creators of Superman, the first and still the quintessential superhero. There's Ruth Handler, the creator of the Barbie doll. Where would we be without them? And if we're caught up in the world of the imagination, how about Steven Spielberg? Obviously, we could keep going with this exercise, and I'm sure many of us will do just that over lunch. But let's stop and regroup. Why do we take the trouble to come up with lists like these? What's this all about? Are we Jews unique in this respect? Or do other ethnic and religious groups do the same thing? Well, to answer that last question, I went, of course, to Google, and I checked it out. And I learned that we Jews are not alone. These are some of the lists you can find online. 6 incredible Canadians who have changed the world. 40 Latinas who have changed the world. And the 10 most influential Armenians in sports history. So we are clearly not alone. We are not the only ones with this mishigas. But really, why do we do this? Here's one reason. It's a sign that we matter. Even though we're a tiny people, only about 14 million or so, depending on which demographic study you follow, by way of comparison, there are 2.8 billion Christians in the world and 1.6 billion Muslims in the world. So we are very, very tiny people, but it's a sign that we are influential in some way. Now, why does that matter to us? Well, partly because we worry. Having influential Jews gives us hope that we'll continue to survive and we'll be able to continue to take care of ourselves, despite natural attrition and despite efforts to harm us. But partly it's in our cultural DNA. It goes back to Abraham. Just a few chapters earlier than the one we read this morning, God says about Abraham that all the nations of the world, not just some, not just your neighbors, but all the nations of the world should be blessed through Abraham and his progeny. And that the mission of Abraham and his descendants, namely all of us, is to do righteousness and justice. Tzedakah u'mishpat. That's what the Torah thinks is the best kind of Jewish influence. But there's another way, a way that's particularly appropriate at this season of the year to think about influence. And that is to think about ourselves. For Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, they're not about other people. They're about us. These are days on which we are called upon to focus on our behavior and how to improve it. We're called upon to apologize for our trespasses and to forgive those who have trespassed against us and who have repented and who seek our forgiveness. Self-improvement isn't furthered. In fact, it may be thwarted by all this focus on other well-known influential Jews. Because if we find ourselves focusing too much on them, we may find ourselves ignoring ourselves. After all, who among us can compete with an Einstein or a Freud? If we spend our time comparing ourselves to them and their accomplishments, then we may be tempted to shrug our shoulders and to say, what can we do? There's a famous Hasidic story about Reb Zusya, who was the brother of the great Hasidic master, Reb Elimelech. When Reb Zusya was dying, he became very upset and agitated, and this distressed his disciples. And one of them asked him, Reb Zusya, why are you anxious about dying? Are you worried that when you die, you'll go before the heavenly throne and God will ask you why you weren't more like your brother, the great Reb Elimelech? Reb Zusya said, No. I have no concerns if, when I die, I'll be asked why I wasn't more like my brother. If that happens, I will know what to say. I'm worried because I may be asked why I wasn't more like myself. Why didn't I live out my life in the way it was meant to be lived? Why didn't I fulfill my potential as Reb Zusya? Rosh Hashanah is about what we can and should do, not about what anyone else may be doing. And it's about our moral qualities, not our talents or our skills or our professions. Comparing our accomplishments to those of someone else, even and maybe especially a brother or a sister, isn't the right way to go. Instead of asking, who are the six most influential Jews in the world, let's ask a different question, more in keeping with the spirit of Rosh Hashanah. Can we name six people in the world whom we have influenced? Now that's a question. Let's think about our spheres of influence. Each of us lives and works within a family and within a community or communities. How effective are we at influencing those around us for the good? Who have we influenced within our own families? I was speaking to someone the other day who was simultaneously trying to care for her ailing parent, maintain a civil relationship with her sibling, and prepare a holiday meal for her grandchildren. Wow. I would say that she's exerting quite a bit of positive influence on those closest to her. And her friends and her acquaintances and her rabbi have certainly learned from that experience. How influential have we been with our children? That is not usually easy to discern. It can take decades, to be sure. How indeed can we influence our children? Menachem Mendel of Kutz was once asked a related question. He was asked, how can I get my child to study Torah? So Menachem Mendel, who was not known for his sweetness and charm, but he was known for being very direct, said the following. If you truly wish your children to study Torah, study it in their presence. They will follow your example. Otherwise, they will not themselves study Torah, but they will simply instruct their own children to do so. According to Reb Menachem Mendel, no one is more influential than a role model. I once knew someone who only discovered after her father's death that he had been contributing to a whole host of worthy causes. Not only did this change her understanding of her father, but it influenced her own behavior from that day on. It can work both ways. The other day I spoke with a woman who was learning how to read Torah from the scroll. Why? Because her own children have learned how to read Torah, and this has inspired her to learn. That is a case where a child can influence a parent. What kind of impact are we having on our community? People in our shul do many things for people in need. Some of us work in a shelter, or deliver food to family table, or knit shawls for our chesed committee. When other people become aware of that, we can end up influencing them. When we participate in a day like the Mitzvah Day that our Social Action Committee organized last June, in which folks made hundreds of sandwiches for the homeless, when we help an organization like Generic Ministries distribute those sandwiches, what kind of example are we setting? Our children, our entire community's children, and others are seeing us perform mitzvot. And our friends who are caring for the homeless, they are seeing us help them as a Jewish community, as an expression of Jewish values. That is influence. What about in our school or our work environments? Has some coworker with whom we took the time at the proverbial water cooler to talk about the complexities of the Middle East learned something positive about Israel because of us? Influence begins with a relationship. What kind of relationships are we building with people who may misunderstand Jews or Judaism, and who, if only we were to reach out to them, we could help better appreciate who we are, what we stand for, and who we try to be. Finally, what have we done to influence ourselves? Have we grown as Jews? How? Do we have it in us to keep growing and learning? One of my favorite Talmudic stories is about Akiba, Akiba ben Yosef, that wonderful Talmudic master of antiquity. According to tradition, he was a shepherd, a poor shepherd, who was illiterate. And it wasn't until he was 40 years of age that he got the bug to learn. Once he did, there was no turning back. He sat down with his own child and learned the alphabet with him, and learned Bible and Mishnah and Talmud, and finally became the Talmudic master whom we know today. He needed to overcome the embarrassment of admitting that he knew less than his own child. But he did. And as a result, the Jewish people gained a cultural icon. This year, we're offering Me'ah in our community, a program that many members of our community have already taken, but not everyone. We're also offering Parenting Through a Jewish Lens. I'll be offering a Talmud class and several other adult ed courses, and other people will be offering courses. And three or four outstanding speakers will be coming to the shul during this Jubilee year, and you can see on the sign outside in the lobby. These are wonderful learning opportunities. These are great opportunities for us to influence ourselves and our Jewish identities for many years to come. Everyone, whether like Rabbi Akiva, we have hit 40 or haven't yet, everyone is welcome to enroll. It is never too late to influence yourself. I urge you to take one of these classes, to volunteer, to get involved. Not only will you be influencing yourself, but you'll be influencing others as well. Your child may see you study, or your grandchild. Your friends will see you study, and then who knows? You may influence this person or that one, and before you know it, you could end up influencing our entire community. Of course, the simplest and perhaps the most significant way to influence others is to live out your life in accordance with your values. A moral, value-laden life that is well-lived can be extraordinarily influential. This can have a profound impact on others. After all, if you're honest, if you're generous, if you're kind, others may come to appreciate those qualities. About 100 years ago, Henry Brooks Adams, an American educational reformer, said the following: "A teacher affects eternity. He, or I might say, or she, can never tell where his or her influence stops." In a sense, whenever we influence the people around us, we are serving as their teacher. And so we never know how far that influence extends. This Rosh Hashanah, my hope is that whether or not we end up on one of those top 6 or top 10 or top 40 or top 4,000 lists, each of us will try to influence ourselves, our families, and our communities, and thereby make the conscious choice to influence eternity. Shana Tova.